this track go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
They like my Colorado swag, cause when I'm in that black, I don't really know just how to act. And when I'm in that gold, you know I'm acting bad. Holla, get a bus with my Colorado swag. My Colorado swag, my Colorado swag. I think they like my Colorado swag. My Colorado swag, my Colorado swag. Might not swear, I think they like my Colorado swag. My Colorado swag, yeah. Is pushing 180. Speeding pad competition, see you later, baby. Colorado Army, with soldiers like the Navy. Yeah. And boaters where we stationed, patiently awaiting. Whoa. When I hit the field, it's so hard to behave. Yeah. I'm Colorado swagging as the crowd do the wave. Look into my eyes, I can tell that you afraid. Uh-huh. Cause you know we finna hit ya.
Hit ya.
Hit ya. Hit ya. Hey. Hey. You on your own now, why you watching the official? Yeah. You just better hope you make it to the next whistle. Uh-huh. And we ain't playing. You can get it anytime. Yeah. It started at the scrimmage. We gon' win it at the line. Yeah. My Colorado swag in the middle of the ring. Throwing blows, knocking down team after team.
I think they like my Colorado swag. Cause when I'm in that play, I don't really know just how to act. And when I'm in that gold, you know I'm acting bad.
Welcome into a special edition of Buff Stampede Radio. Today, I am joined by voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. Mark, you really don't need much of an introduction. You've been calling CU football and men's basketball games for over 22 years on the airwaves now. How you been, man? What you been up to since that spring game on April 11th?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. You and I both, as folks are well aware of, have kind of had our own health issues from silliness that we're involved in. And so, just getting healthy. And this, Adam, is my downtime of year, you know. And so I still have certainly duties I do at CU, appearances and speaking events and voiceover stuff and all of that. But obviously,
annoying podcasters reaching out.
That's right. And annoying podcasters. But, you know, so I'm not broadcasting games. And so you don't have the preparation, you don't have game days and all of that. And so this is a quieter period for me during the calendar year. And I just love it. As you well know, I've got a ranch up in the mountains and kind of spend my time up here and working on a lot of things and catching up on this and that and running after my granddaughters and doing some team roping. And so this is a nice time of year when I refresh a little bit and just kind of relax. But it's always good to talk about the Buffs.
You've answered pretty much every question at this point in your broadcasting career. And I'm sure this has been asked, but I have yet to hear an answer here. So I'm going to dive right in with this one, Mark. What age were you when your voice turned into what it is?
Well, that's funny because I was always a talkative young man. And I used to joke with my family all the time that, seriously, Mom, Dad, who am I? Where did I come from? Because I'm not yours. Adam, I came from a very introverted family. The worst thing in the world for any of them would be to, you know, speak publicly. If you were around my family, very quiet. If there's a, you know, gathering, people would sit in corners and there wasn't much, activity. It's just the way they were. And so being that I was kind of a loud kid all the time and enjoyed speaking, I couldn't figure out. I kept saying, seriously, I mean, what was the milkman like? What was the mailman like? Right? That was always the joke with my mom. And so I always had this loud voice. In fact, I've told this story before. Anybody that is a little more seasoned like I am, a little bit more veteran, you'll remember this. Back in school, when you got your report cards, they'd always have these conduct grades on there. And they were 1 through 4. 1 meant that you were a saint. 4 meant that you were on the doorstep of being a felon, right? And I'd always get 4. When it came to, I don't remember how they termed it, but, you know, the fact that you talked a lot in class, I'd always get like a 3 or a 3+ because I wouldn't stop talking. I was always yakking with somebody. And so my parents were always on me, you got to stop talking so much. And so ultimately, you know, it kind of leads me down this path. I've told this publicly before. I was coming out of high school. I was going to be a sportscaster or a pastor. And, you know, being that I was an athlete, that just felt natural to me. But really, when I got to college, so I was a decent basketball player, and I played college basketball. When I graduated, I was about 6'2", and my freshman year, I grew to 6'5", and went through like a second puberty because my voice dropped.
And oh, wow. Okay.
So, yeah. And so that's when it kind of, you know, got the, you know, the baritone nature to it, if you will. But it was always loud. I always talked a lot. And I was always had a voice to project it. And so it was always something that was around me. It was something I was doing. Somebody somewhere, one of my high school teammates has got an old VHS videotape. During the JV games, which are played before the varsity games, I'd roll up a program. And one of the guy's sisters, older sisters, would videotape me, and I'd do a pregame show with the guys on my team and interview them, and you know that. So it was always something I was involved in, and I always kind of had that projecting loud voice that you know, I knew I was my joke is always I was going to be a sportscaster or work the drive through at McDonald's, one of the two, and I guess sportscasting one.
That's great. What type of basketball player was Mark Johnson? Do you have a player comp where you Jerry West out there? What were we watching when Mark was playing hoops?
When I was growing up, just because of the name, right? I grab it, and because of who was coming up at that point in time. You know, in 1979, when Magic Johnson came on the scene in the NBA, I became a Lakers fan automatically. Growing up in North Dakota, where I did, the Minnesota Timberwolves were years away, so there wasn't a regional team that we followed. So I became a Lakers fan because of Magic Johnson. So I tried. To model my game after him. But truth be told, what I ended up being, I mean, I understood the game pretty well. I actually flirted at one point, maybe I should be a coach, after I realized that there was no need for a guy like me in the NBA, right? That wasn't going to happen. And so I thought, well, maybe I should coach. And then I said, no, it's not going to happen. I'm going to broadcast. And so I was an all offense, not a lot of defense kind of guy. I was one of the top scorers in the state my senior year, was an all-state guy, played college for 2 years, then got hurt, had back surgery, and so my career came to an end. But I once said to a coach of mine, he was kind of getting in my backside after a game we lost, and talking about my defense, and I said, Coach, I had 29 tonight. Guy was guarding, only had 18. I won. I did my job, right? Which didn't go over very well for the coach. Right?
I can't imagine.
He said, that's not defense. I said, well, I won my battle. Let's get the other four guys to win theirs, and we'll win the ball game kind of thing. But I could shoot. I was a very good shooter. And you got to remember, I was playing high school ball in North Dakota when we were transitioning into the three-point line. And so that became part of it. Even though on the team that I played in my senior year, we weren't very good, they called me a point center because I'd bring the ball up the court against pressure and then hand it off to a guard, and because I was about the biggest guy on the team, I'd go post up then and work down on the block and step out and hit threes and that kind of thing. And so that's what my game was all about, but not a lot of defense. I would have driven Tad Boyle out of his mind if he would have had to coach me.
A lot of guys have driven Tad Boyle out of his mind, and he'll let you know about it, which is right. One of my favorite things about him. I want to discuss some of your early gigs, but first kind of touch on some of the current Buff stuff. Obviously, it's been a roller coaster ride with Coach Prime the last 3+ years. As a veteran broadcaster and hosting his weekly radio show, how have you kind of dealt with Coach Prime keeping you on your toes in those settings?
Well, I'll tell you this, Adam, that I've said this many times, that I'm glad I was not a 29-year-old young broadcaster when Prime came in. And I say that, that's not a shot against him in any way, shape, or form. When you bring a guy in that is of that magnitude, and I've said many times, he's an icon, he's a brand, he's a legend, he's one of the greatest athletes the world has ever seen, he's a phenomenal personality, he's an incredibly bright guy in terms of he views everything. Some of the conversations we've had about broadcasting, one time I said to him, I said, how do you know that? I said, you just said something that most broadcasters don't understand, and, you know, in Prime's typical way, he said, I'm paying attention all the time. And I said, yeah, I know you are. I've kind of learned that about him. So I'm glad that I was a more mature guy and been around the block, dealt with Jim Boeheim and Bobby Knight over the past year. So I dealt with major personalities. And so I'm glad that I had that in my background. That allowed me to kind of figure out how to interact with Prime, because he has said, you know, if you're a young guy and you're going to sit down and do, a radio show, TV show type thing that we do with Coach Prime, well, you want to talk about easily being intimidated. You certainly would be. And so being the fact that I've been around a block a few times, I felt comfortable understanding that, you know, you've got to kind of go back and forth and you joust a little bit with these guys. And they respect that when you, you know, kind of ask them, you know, more challenging situations and don't just, you know, let them walk over you. And so I've enjoyed being around Prime. Number one, when the light goes on, he knows exactly what he's doing. And so I've had coaches that have been very difficult to interview. Years ago, I'll leave them nameless at this point in time, I had to stop an interview one time, and I looked at the coach, and I said, you do understand this is an eight-minute pregame interview. Whether I ask two questions or 80 questions, it's going to go 8 minutes. So you got to help me here, because he was giving the one-word answers. With Prime, you don't worry about that. Prime fully understands. He gets it. He fully appreciates what broadcasting is all about, how you present, how you entertain. And so it's fun doing a show with him because he understands that. And so I've always enjoyed that. And I understand that when you're in a position like he is, you probably wonder, what are the people around me? What are they looking for? What do they want?
Right?
Because he's one of those guys that, you know, everyone wants something from Deion Sanders. They want an autograph. They want an appearance. They want money. They want whatever it is. And so I understood early on that he was going to be a little bit leery. Who is this Mark Johnson guy? Yeah, he's been here at CU a long time. I don't know this guy from Adam. It's going to take some time. And so I've enjoyed the fact that over the course of the 3 years that I think I've grown to know him. I think he's grown to trust me in many respects. And so I very much enjoy my relationship I have with him. You know, doing what I do for a living, what you want is when you're on the air with somebody that's really good. I did a speaking event with Mike Rowe the other day, by the way, the Dirty Jobs guy.
Yeah.
And he and I were on stage right in front of about 1,600 people. And for about 45 minutes, he and I were going back and forth. And I got down, I said to my wife, I said, you don't know for somebody that does what I do for a living how much fun that was. Because Mike Rowe is really good, right? And so we're just going at each other and you know, making it entertaining. Well, Coach Prime is exactly the same way. I mean, he's really good at what he does. And so when you're mixing up with Prime, man, that can be – there have been times we get done with shows, and my longtime engineer, Shannon Scott, everyone start walking away, and we'll wrap up, and he'll look at me and go, that was really good. He goes, and Shannon doesn't give compliments very often. You know him. When Shannon says something like that, you know that something really good happened. And so I can't tell you how many times in doing that show with Coach Prime that Shannon's made that comment, and I walked away thinking, okay, that was pretty good. That was pretty good radio or TV we just did right there, because he's so darn good.
That CU coach you mentioned with the one-word answers, I'm not going to put you on the spot, but I have a guest to put out there. I'll do that when we end the recording. But you brought up Jim Boeheim. From the outside looking in, he seemed like quite the character. How much did that kind of really accelerate your growth in that sense as you were, I would say, you were probably in your 30s at that point?
Yep, mid-30s, and I get there. Now, keep in mind, so I'd come up, as I mentioned, from North Dakota, right, working small market stuff. I get my first Division I job at Illinois State. That was in 1997, I think, 98, somewhere in that range. And Kevin Stallings was there, who was not easy to deal with, not easy to work with. I like Kevin, but he was very challenging at different times. And prior to that, by the way, Gene Cady, the Hall of Fame coach at Purdue, because I was in West Lafayette, Indiana, and Gene took me under his wing. And you know what Gene's persona was like when he was coaching. He was a tough son of a gun. And he would beat me up pretty good. And so with those guys, and he was responsible, by the way, he kind of made the deciding phone call and said to Illinois State, basically, if you don't hire this kid, you're out of your mind. Hire him. And so getting that kind of endorsement from a Hall of Fame coach got me that job. And so I had dealt with some pretty good personalities by that point in time. I mean, Katie was, you know, pretty heavy duty. I had a good bit of dealings with Bobby Knight, because when I was at Purdue, you deal with Indiana quite a bit within the Big Ten at that time, and then Kevin Stallings. So when I got to Syracuse, you get Jim Boeheim, one of the legendary coaches in college basketball. And Jim can be awful salty at times. He can very much challenge you. And so things were not easy. And then Jim's one of those guys that doesn't like change, right? He likes things to be very comfortable. He has got, you know, a chief of staff. He's got his assistant coaches. He's got his trainers. He likes to have everything very uniform. But so when the new guy comes in, he was very leery about me, and it was not easy those first couple of years dealing with Jim. So that all kind of led to the maturation and learning, understanding how to address these guys. And Adam, you've been around the block a long time as well. You know, there are some coaches that are a dream to work with. There are some that can be very difficult, and many times the public persona is very different than the way they are with us in the media. And so there's a challenge, and there's always an educational process we go through when a new coach comes in. How is he or she going to be to deal with? Are they professional? Are they cantankerous? Are they combative? You know, whatever it might be. Yeah. And so you go through that learning process, and I think it for what you do, which is more kind of the print end of things, but for what I do, which is going to be more of the performative broadcast end of things, it can be a difficult transition at different times. So all of those guys kind of prepared me then for what I ultimately, enjoyed now being able to do with Coach Prime, because I've seen a bunch of different type of approaches and personalities.
And that's why, even though both of us have been in Boulder for a long time, it never gets boring. No. There's always something. I think we're on our 7th full-time football coach. And yeah, you're right. Every one of them has had their different personalities, different quirks. You know, Mike McIntyre, I think after 5 years, I still hadn't figured him out, but I like the guy. I like the guy,
yes.
So it's a challenge. It really is. Triple double crunch wrap and Zab's nacho fries. When one layer isn't enough, we go bigger. Actually, at Taco Bell, they go triple. Introducing the triple double crunch wrap. Premium all-white meat, marinated chicken seasoned with bold Mexican spices and tossed in a crunchy tortilla chip coating and dusted with bold, flavorful Diablo spice seasoning, served with spicy ranch sauce as well. And because Taco Bell, they don't stop there. They're going to pair it with Zab's topped nacho fries, golden, crispy nacho fries, savory, slow roasted chicken, warm nacho cheese sauce, freshly prepared pico de gallo, a creamy ranch that is infused with Zab's St. Augustine sauce, and a blend of mozzarella, pepper jack, and cheddar cheeses. This isn't just a meal. It's a full-on flavor experience. More layers, more flavor, more reasons to come back to Taco Bell again. Because, yeah, at Taco Bell, they don't do average. They do extra. Triple, double Crunchwrap and Zab's natural fries. Only at Taco Bell. Live Moss.
If you know Boulder, you know the Hungry Toad. We've been serving this town since 1991, long before the lines on Pearl Street. Just north of campus, we're your local British pub with proper fish and chips, quality burgers, a scratch kitchen, real English cask ale, and no tourist fluff. We support CU football, women's soccer, and the loyal fans who keep it local. The Hungry Toad, Boulder born, Buffs proud.
In terms of your career, you've had a front row seat and delivered the story to the people for Carmelo Anthony and Travis Hunter. Those got to be the top two, right, that you've ever done play-by-play for?
Without question. I mean, when you look at guys that were just different, that just had a different feel. So when I'm at Syracuse, so here I'm this young guy getting my first kind of upper-level job, and I walk on campus, come here from Sikkim about Syracuse. I'm brand new. I'm trying to figure it all out. And all I hear is they got the number one recruit in America, some guy named Carmelo, right? And don't know anything about him. But you walk on the practice court. I walked in. I remember it was early. I got into town right around August 1, and football obviously is first and foremost in my mind, but I heard some of the guys were working out in basketball, and obviously Syracuse being a basketball powerhouse. I wander on over to the gym one day and just watched and said, okay, who's this kid everyone's talking about? And Adam, it took all of about 3 seconds to notice that this dude was really, really different. And then, you know, you get into the season and you see, and obviously that was a special team, and, you know, Jerry McNamara, who just became the head coach, and Queth Dewaney and Akeem Warwick, who played a long time in the NBA and on and on down the line. But being around a guy like that and seeing it, and then talk about preparation for what we saw there that second year for Coach Prime, that was preparation, because as that year wore on, that team went from being unranked to start the season to obviously winning a national championship. But as the year went on, it began to grow and grow and grow. And I used to tell people, we'd roll into town, you know, for a ball game and land, and it was like the Beatles were coming to town. I mean, it was Carmelo, it was Queth Dewaney, Jerry McNamara became a star as that year, you know, because I'm unfolding this.
Did he ever miss a shot in practice?
I don't think he ever did. No, you're right. I mean, just tougher than nails. And so it was a good training for me to kind of see how this whole thing worked and how people reacted. And then you being along for the ride in my role, So when 2024 happened here, and you see what Travis Hunter was. Now, obviously, the year before, we got a taste. We knew that kid is really a freak of
that
an
TCU
athlete.
Interception is all you needed. All you needed.
Well, you know, Gary Barnett, who's one of the great coaches of old time and has forgotten more football than you and I will ever know. We were not very deep into that first season when Prime got here. And I don't know what Travis did. One of the, you know, million plays he made that were just ridiculous. And Gary looked at me at one point and he said, that might be the finest football player I've ever seen. And I said, really? All the guys that you've coached, all the NFL? He goes, Mark, I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like that before. And so then we got to kind of get in that windup, right, for the Heisman season. You knew what he was. We'd seen it. And then you get into year number two, and he was just spectacular. And I kept telling myself, because I learned it from the Mello deal, when you see one of those guys, you get caught up in the middle of it. And so I kept telling myself that year number two with Travis, enjoy this.
Yeah.
Take note of what you see. Because I got through that championship season with Syracuse, and it was almost a blur to me. It was year number one, and so that played into it as well. But you get caught up in the magnitude of what's happening. And so that year for the Heisman Trophy with Travis, I was reminding myself all the time, take note. Are you appreciating what you're seeing? Are you you're thinking about the games and what he's doing and how you can describe that better and all those kind of things. And so I so enjoyed watching him that year because, yeah, I don't know if I'm ever going to see another one like that in my career.
Mark, I pinched myself in New York when I checked in to cover the Heisman.
I bet.
I'd never expected that was going to happen.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, Zim and I used to talk about it because Zim had Rashawn, right? And so Zim always used to say to me, God rest his soul, Larry would always say to me at some point in time, you know, Mark, you're gonna call a championship and you're going to call a Heisman Trophy winner. Well, listen, when I got here in 04, I don't need to tell you or the fans out there, this hasn't been the golden era of Colorado football in my 22 years here, for goodness sake. Bowl games, my first 2 years with Gary, he gets fired. See one early on with Hawk, then another one until 2016. Then he had the truncated COVID year. I don't even count that.
That doesn't count.
Exactly. And until we get to Prime and then, you know, go to a bowl game there in 2024. But, I started thinking to myself, yeah, none of that stuff's going to happen. Right. And then Prime comes along and Shadur comes along and Travis is here. And lo and behold, you know, I get to call a season with the Heisman Trophy winner. So, yeah, that was awful special. I will remember that for the rest of my life.
Next time the Buffs gain bowl eligibility, no offense to the Riverwalk. I like the setting. Buffs got to go somewhere else. That is not the place for them.
No. There must be something in the air or water, Adam, down there, because the last handful of times we've been in the Alamo Bowl, it's not gone well.
Brutal. Everything's great until they kick off.
Exactly, yes.
I'm glad you brought up Larry Zimmer. You were in the broadcast booth with him for him being with the role that Gary's in now. Yep. As yep.
12
an
years.
12 years, okay.
Yep.
What is there a story you can share to give insight into the late, great Larry Zimmer and what made him a good broadcaster?
Well, I'll tell you, there's two aspects of that. Let me tell you about the first conversation Larry and I ever had. So I'm out at Syracuse, and I really thought at that point in time I'd be staying at Syracuse for the rest of my life. At one point in time, the Buffalo Bills were talking to the people at Syracuse about sharing me and doing both. And then that's another story for another time, but there was a reason that fell through. And so I just thought, well, you know what? I'm very comfortable here. I love it. It's a great athletic department. It's a great program. Upstate New York is gorgeous. I'll just be sticking around here. And then I get a call out of the blue from the Denver Broncos and KOA Radio, and they asked me to come out if I'd fill in and do a couple of football games after I did the championship. And so I came out and did that. And then the next year, as the good Lord would have it, Syracuse in 2004 came through the Pepsi Center at that time for the NCAA tournament. And the folks at KOA called me up and said, hey, one of our shows is out at Brooklyn's. You want to come out after your game and spend 10 minutes with them? And I did 2 hours, and they called me that night and offered me a job, okay? And growing up in North Dakota, I always had my eye on Denver. I thought, man, that's a market I'd really like to work in. And so they offered me the sports director's job and the voice of the Buffs at that point in time. And so we go through our negotiations, and I had not met Larry. I certainly knew of him. He was a legendary figure. We all knew that. Our business is small enough where We kind of all know who one another is, even if we haven't met each other. But I was doing, at that time, during my offseason, I do some minor league baseball. The Toronto Blue Jays had a AAA team in Syracuse. So I was doing a game one day, and it just so happened we were in a rain delay. And I looked down, my cell phone's ringing, and it's a Denver number, 303 number, and I pick it up, and it's Zim. And we do introductions. And I say to him, I said, well Larry, I'm sure this hasn't been easy, because you know, Zim had been the play-by-play guy since, what, 1971, minus those 3 years he did the Rams. And I said, when did they tell you that they were bringing me in? And Larry says, I found out about an hour ago.
Oh, wow.
And I said, Larry, I am so sorry. I thought by my conversations you were involved in these, and I don't. He said, no. They kind of surprised me with this one, and I was thinking immediately how I would have felt if that would have been the case. And Zim, as gracious a man as he was, said to me, Mark, I want you to know something. That will never be an issue between you and me, because you had nothing to do with it. I was a young broadcaster at one point in time, and so I'm looking forward to working with you. And that said something about his humility and the kind of human being he was. And Adam, if you'll allow me, I get to town, and you remember when we always used to have those little kickoff luncheons and pep rallies downtown Denver, right there at the Civic Center, right before the Rocky Mountain Showdown.
Yeah.
So not long there later, this was in probably early July when he and I had this conversation. I moved to Denver. It's beginning of August again. And so right the week before the game, we have this event. And I am sitting in the crowd, and I don't remember who was emceeing at the time, but they said, let's welcome up the new voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson. And the crowd's applauding, and I get up, and I'm walking up, and as I'm walking towards the podium, something is just eating at me about being introduced that way. And I got up there, and I said to the podium, I said, folks, thank you very much. I appreciate that introduction. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm excited to be part of the Buff family and this and that. But I said, would you guys do me a favor? And Zim was sitting down the front row. I said, that man right there is the voice of the Buffaloes. Until he retires, I'm just the play-by-play guy. And I said, if you would please honor him in that regard. And Adam, for 12 years, you know this, you'd heard the open a broadcast. Alongside legendary voice of the Buffaloes, Larry Zimmer, I'm Mark Johnson. And so that was my way to repay Larry for his graciousness and his professionalism. And Zim was so phenomenal for all 12 years. He coached me. You know, I'd call him up, Larry, I don't understand. What does this mean? Who is this person? How do they fit into CU's history? And Zim would guide me and lead me. And then for the years after Gary took over, I mean, he'd still be coaching Gary and me, you know, when we're doing the game. And he'd text us during the game and go, hey, don't forget about this. This happened in, 1981 and that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, Zim was the ultimate professional and a very gracious, gracious gentleman. And I miss him dearly daily.
And this was just one bit of his very long, successful career, but yeah. He nailed the call in Michigan. And Mark John, they did a good job on the national TV broadcast.
Yeah, but Keith Jackson. Yeah.
Jackson.
Yes.
But Larry, he got Westbrook's name in there. I don't think Keith ever did.
I think you got that backwards. Zim did.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, Keith did. And let me give you a little background of that. So I thought Zim made a great call. And one thing that we always, in broadcast, we always don't lie to the audience, okay? And Larry didn't. Remember, he said, I don't know who caught it, because it was just a mad pileup in the end zone. Keith Jackson actually said, after an extended period of time, it's Westbrook, okay? So the next week, somebody, one of the newspaper guys, criticized Zim for not getting the player. And I think Larry felt a little bad about that. Well, the next week, ABC was doing the Buffs game again, and Keith Jackson came down to the booth and said to Zim, he said, hey, your call was fantastic. And it was. It was very, very good. It was a very good call. He said, that garbage about criticizing, about knowing his, I had no idea who he was. Keith said, the only way I knew is we had a cameraman right there in the end zone, and he was screaming on his headset, it's Westbrook, it's Westbrook. Okay. Keith said, otherwise, I had no idea who caught it, because it was such chaos. And, you know, that's the thing about when we're doing what we do. You know this, we're sitting up in the press box. We're 70 yards away from the action, as high as we are, as far away. And you're trying to get it all in. Football's such a massive game, and it's so incredible that we can even do the game because of how big everything is. And so we all prepare so hard to make sure that we can see everything and report everything. But some guys will try and fake it. I thought Zim did a great job. He didn't lie to anybody. I don't know who's got it. I don't know who caught it, he said. And I thought that was honest. The authenticity and honesty of that call is part of what makes it great. And he nailed that one. He nailed when Rashawn went over 2,000 yards. He nailed that call. Zim had a way of rising to the level of the moment, and he certainly did on those two occasions.
With the current Buffs, a lot of the excitement is about the addition of Brandon Marion on staff this year as new OC. And you know, Mark, I'm looking back at that OC situation that we've had, and I thought Brian Lindgren did some nice things. I thought he was underrated overall as an OC. At CU, Sean Lewis just wasn't a fit with Shador. That wasn't going to work that year. Chev was very good in 16. A lot of ups and downs after that. Jay Johnson was okay. I mean, dude called a flea flicker at the 2-yard line. I mean, that's something.
I'd almost forgotten about that. I tried to forget about it, and thank you for reminding all of us about that.
But we haven't covered an offensive coordinator at CU in the same stratosphere from a creativity standpoint, right? Now, the proof is in the pudding. It's very complicated. It sounds like the quarterbacks have to be three things, as Marion said, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday quarterback. At different positions, you're going to ask for up-tempo. You're going to ask for a lot from these guys. So it's going to be, you know, maybe a challenging transition, but it does feel like they're setting up to play some fun offensive football, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by it. And, you know, the little bit we got during the spring showcase, I won't call it a spring game, but the spring showcase really piqued my interest because of all the different things that this offense encompasses. You know, and I sit next to a guy who do offense pretty good. And we got done with the spring game, and I said, what do you think of that? And he goes, boy, he goes, there are some things here that really are interesting in terms of what he does. And so I think for all of us that cover this thing and all the fans that cheer for the Buffs, we're all kind of, you know, cautiously excited about what's that going to look like. How does it work? Because he's borrowed things, Adam, from so many different systems and somehow has incorporated them all together. And you hope, you know, Juju being a young quarterback who is supremely talented. We just don't know what he's going to be able to, you know, he started, what, 2 games, right? And so we don't know what he's going to blossom into. I mean, I always say potential is the most dangerous word in the world, right? We've all got potential, and, you know, some live up to it, some don't. We're excited about what he is, the talent he has, the way he throws the ball. He's a bright kid. He's getting in this new system. And so all of this newness coming together, this kind of confluence of all these different attributes heading into this 2026 season. I think that's one of the more exciting kind of interesting aspects of what we're going to, you know, kind of be watching and viewing as we get into August.
And one last question on the football side. On the other side of the ball, I guess this move means that Robert Livingston, he's just an NFL guy. So Chris Marv comes in short order. He was kind of maybe kind of a backup plan there all along, it sounds like, based on what Coach Prime has told us. He certainly seemed to demand the defensive huddle this spring, and we can certainly overanalyze spring ball, but do you have any impressions of the new DC in Boulder?
Well, there's a toughness there I like, right? And that's the one thing, you know, doing this as long as I have, that's the one thing I look for in the defensive side. Does that guy bring an attitude, a swagger, an edge? You know, I've been around guys that I think there was bravado that didn't quite ring true when you watch their defenses, right? Everyone, and most coaches will say about the same thing. So I don't pay much attention to, you know, maybe this is kind of the old cynic in me. I'm not sure. Being around as long as I have, you know, when Neil Welk and I would talk about that on a regular basis, right? He said, we've both been doing this long enough where we could pretty much write the press conference story without actually hearing the press conference because there's not a lot new that's said. Everyone comes in saying the right things. We want to be tough. We want to be disciplined. We want to work hard. We're going to be good in the classroom and all these different things. We hear those things all the time. And so after a period of time, you kind of get a little bit callous to that kind of stuff. And I start looking about, it's, you know, I got a little Missourian in me. You got to show me. I want to see it. Show me the authenticity of what you're talking about. And so when I look at Coach Marv and I say, I really watched him. There's a toughness that I see in him and an edge. And that's what I always look for, because if that is authentically there, it seems like those defenses begin to, you know, wear some of that themselves and take on some of those characteristics. And so there are things I wonder about in that defensive side. Do we have all the pieces that we need on that side of the ball to be successful? And, you know, what will that system look like? Will they play the right system? But at least I see what I think I look for all the time. And that's that kind of toughness or that edge, that grit on that side of the ball that you have to be good.
And Coach Marv was one of the guys that stood out to me this spring, because I think you have, like you were kind of alluding to there, you have to have a certain personality to excel yes. in that role. And it has to be genuine. You know, you don't want Prime's first year when Charles Kelly's head looked like it was going to explode because they had all those late penalties with guys running on right. off the field. So hopefully we can avoid that with Chris Marv. But, and I was going to, as I close out this podcast, Mark, I was going to ask you what you're going to be up to, because you said it's your downtime. But I'm starting to do the role here. So you got to keep the ranch going.
Yep.
You proudly share the gospel of Jesus Christ every day.
Yep. Yep.
You're a hunter.
Yep.
Wife, three kids.
I got three kids, two boys and a girl. Yeah, 34, 32, and 29. My oldest son, you've been around Jacob Adam. He's a special needs child. And so Jake's 29, but he's our forever child. Like, as you and I speak, my wife has got him at his horse OT down at the National Western Complex nice. Right now. And my oldest son lives here in the area. In fact, we've got another little A-frame on the other side of our property. He lives there. And my daughter is involved in the charity world in Denver, married to a young man who's a Boulder SWAT team member and a firefighter. And we got two granddaughters. And so my off-season is chasing them around. And this time of year, I do some fly fishing. And I do a lot of team roping. That's what got me in trouble here a couple of years ago, where I got hurt so bad. And spent some time at the hospital. But I'm back doing that, training a young horse. And every year, right before football, I do a 100-mile wilderness ride with a group of guys. And we're going to do 100 miles in the mountains. This year, we're going to be down in New Mexico. And so I get back, I don't know, July 30th or 31st, something like that, and then jump right into football. And that always signals the end of the year. But listen, I've had a couple of opportunities to do Major League Baseball. As you well know, for a number of years when I was with KOA, I did quite a bit of baseball with the Rockies. But twice I've had opportunities to do baseball. And I've turned it down every single time. And there are friends of mine in the broadcast world say, why in the world did you turn that down? And I say, people, I live in Colorado, which has got the greatest summers anywhere in the world. Are you kidding me? I'm not working every single day all through June, July, and August, man. I'm gonna enjoy the state of Colorado and all the beautiful weather we have. And so I just love being in here. And, you know, I've long since decided I'm not going anywhere. I love Colorado. I love being here. I love the Buffs. My wife, years ago, I'd been in town here 4 or 5 years. I got a call from an NFL team and they offered me a job. And initially I said to them, how about if I fly in and do the games? And they said, no, we want you to be here and be part of the community like you are there. And so I sat down with my wife and I said, what do you think? And we kind of went over the pros and cons. And finally she looks at me, Adam, and she says, you know what? I think you should take that job. And I said, really? And she said, yes. The kids and I will come visit, because there's no way we're leaving Colorado, but you go ahead and take that job, right? And so it became very apparent a long time ago that nobody in the family wants to leave, including me. And so I just love enjoying the summers here in Colorado.
We discovered that maybe a decade ago. It's like you try to travel in the summer and it's busy everywhere. It's humid and hot in a lot of places. Yes. It's like, why are we doing this? We have the greatest backyard in the world right now.
Exactly right. I mean, sometimes because of familiarity, we forget about that, don't we? Right?
We do. Yeah.
You know, I promised myself when I moved here 22 years ago, I was never going to take looking up into the Rocky Mountains for granted. I would never take that for granted. And now I live in the middle of them, obviously. But those kind of things, familiarity breeds, I think, what's the word? My vocabulary is failing me right now. But it kind of breeds a lackluster view of the things around you. And I think sometimes we have to stop and turn around, take a look, and said, you know what? I can't imagine there's a better spot to live than the state of Colorado, man. Let's enjoy that. So that's what I try and do in the summers when I got a little bit of downtime.
We're both 2+ decades in with the Buffs, and let's keep it rolling, Mark. enjoy every opportunity I've had to a chance to chat with you over the years. You're the man.
All right. I appreciate it. And hey, man, I'm so glad you're doing better and things are kind of going the right direction health wise. And so I enjoyed it as well. So this has been fun. I've enjoyed this.
Great stuff, Mark. I appreciate you, and I appreciate everybody out there tuning in.